Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think, and it is all about the BBC this week. BBC in crisis, Beeb on the block, Beeb probably starting war with America, I don't know. Rachel Fairbairn, welcome to the show. You are, where are you at the moment?
I'm in Manchester.
You're in Manchester. Have you been out on the streets? Is everyone talking about the crisis at the BBC?
It's all I'm hearing. It's all I am hearing.
In the bookies, yeah. In Poundland, it's just, yeah. People are just shaking their heads at what's happened. I mean, jump straight into it because it is such a big story. And in a way, refreshing not to talk about Labour. But some people have said, well, you're only talking about Labour. Well, they have been the story for quite a while. But we're going to have a good old chat about what's going on at BBC. But also from that distance of we're not in the news. Like the people in the news industry, do they realise, like, that the degree to which they give a shit about it, most other people don't?
Yeah, that's a good point. But I do think this is a national scandal.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we're going to talk about this, the way that they edited this Panorama show. And, first up, how are you giving Donald Trump a moral victory on Truth is fucking quite an achievement. I mean, it really is. It really is sort of impressive. But also, there was another Beeb in the Mud scandal on Friday when Have I Got News For You had two incidents, Rachel, of the C word. Disgrace. Where's the decency? So we're going to talk in the second section about that, but also about the things that still have the power to offend, really. I mean, it kind of changes over time, and it's almost refreshing in a way to have an old-fashioned taste and decency issue. Mm. That's what this is, right? Takes you back, doesn't it, Rachel?
Do you know, I'm going to sound quite prudish, you know, because I sometimes find myself tutting at things on the TV. Like, I'm like, that's inappropriate. Or like things that are shown at certain times, like you flick through all the channels and I saw two people really getting off with each other on something. And I was like, no, I'm like, this is like 4 o'clock. Why is this on TV?
Was it Bargain Hunt? Had they just done a really good deal and David Dickinson got involved? Is he still alive? I don't know.
He is still alive, don't worry. Yeah.
We're going to talk about that. We're also getting a Patreon only. Now, we've had a little trend, Rachel. I'm keeping an eye. I like to keep an eye on things that I think are going to be a big story soon. And we've talked about the rise of misandry in young women, right? Young women like actively being hostile towards young men. And the article that I mentioned last week with Vittorio about is it embarrassing to have a boyfriend kind of got picked up by the BBC news page. And it's sort of creating a discussion about how young women feel about men. So I thought, having discussed it with two male comics, it might be a good idea maybe to get a female perspective.
Great.
And the piss take prices thing has really been taking off. So hopefully you've got a piss take price in a second. I put up a new list last week and I included in it Bristol Airport and 25 quid for drop off, right? Which is a lot. That is the noise. That is the piss take price noise. So people, wow. I know a lot of people are submitting them, but it's got to be that kind of price that even in context is still shocking. So saying £11 for a large wine at an arena gig is both expensive, but not, that's not a gasp. It's within the realms of piss takes we expect.
Yeah, you expect that.
Yeah, yeah. But then there was a steward's inquiry on that, and it turned out that I think it was like for an hour of parking to pick people. I still think that's a fucking load of money.
That's still too much.
It's still way too much money. But is it piss-takey? Piss-takey for a drop-off for an hour's parking? Okay, well, all right, that stands. We put it to an inquiry.
How much money do people think we've got?
That is a really good question.
You leave the house, money is just falling out of your pocket. It's like living life to just exist the moment you leave your house is 50 quid. I think that you leave the house, it's 50 quid.
The budget's coming up. I think that is probably one of the things that Rachel Reeves has considered, like just a surcharge, the leave your house surcharge. You know what it reminds me of? Is you know that end of the Crystal Maze? Remember that show where they used
to go in
and there was all that stuff flying around?
Yeah.
Like all those things they had to pick up. But it's like that, but all the stuff is coming out of your pocket.
Yeah.
You're like in a kind of wind vacuum and it's just sucking money out of your pocket. And somebody emailed me. If you want to email, remember you can get in touch, just hashtag piss take prices anywhere. I will periodically look at them. One place I'll definitely see them is the show email, which is what most people think uk@gmail.com, and I had one come in which was for the M&S Big Beef Wellington. Now I don't know how big it is, but it's coming in at £195. That is,
I beg your pardon, Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know how many people that has to feed and for how long. I'm sort of thinking that's got to be, I mean, that is kind of like groceries for a single person for a month, isn't it?
Well, I went to, I was in Sainsbury's the other day and I've only recently got a Nectar card. And I hate that system of this is how much it is, but if you have a Nectar card, it's cheaper. It's like, can't we just have it at the cheaper price for everybody? So I live with my boyfriend, which apparently is embarrassing now. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, so cringe, man. So cringe.
So such an ick, isn't it? We bought just a few things to make tea or dinner, if you're in the South. It was like 70 quid. And I'm like, we haven't bought anything extravagant here. And I'm thinking, how do people live? It is becoming, it's actually sometimes now, I think, instead of buying the things to make what you're going to have for your tea, you may as well just get a takeaway.
You know, I have gone down the road of that logic, and I don't think it fully stands up on a numbers basis, but on an emotional basis, it has an appeal. What I think it does, where it does stand up, is the premium, where you go like, look, it's only that much more, but for people to bring it to my house. But also there's a levy of the effort that you have to go into to convince yourself that you'll just feed yourself on that for the rest of the month.
Yes.
Right, new patrons. Remember, if you are a patron, you get the podcast early, ad-free, with bonus content and loads of other advantages. We've got five blokes, so let's crack into them. That sounded a bit gay.
You like a male Bonnie Blue?
We've got George Bailey. George is a returner. So just remember, if you've been thinking, hang on, I was a member of that, what most people think, patron community, and then I stopped seeing stuff. Go and look, check your account's still active, because obviously your bank changes your card every 4 weeks. So if that's happened, you might have dropped out. We've got Rob Black, Mr. Black. Jesus, was he in Reservoir Dogs?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
That must have been a great era for Rob Black. I remember my mate Mick, when Trainspotting come out, my mate just happened to look like Mark Renton at the time.
Oh.
They were literally throwing it at him on the streets, the women were.
What a great time.
Yeah, it was a great time for him. So, Mr. Black, you are welcome. Chris Roper. I'd imagine Chris Roper is one of those guys that will get people will just always be trying to spin out a riff on his name. Roper Dope, eh? On the ropes? Is Ropesy coming?
Yeah. Also, it sounds a very reliable name, though, I think.
Well, we'll come on to nominative determinism in a sec. But, you know, they sort of say that your family surname comes from what the job was. So I think it's quite clear there. Or that his family were just prodigiously well hung and it was like a nickname. The Ropers. We've got Phelpsy here. Phelpsy. I don't know if that's definitely, well, yes, it is a bloke. There's very rare that women give themselves that kind of nickname based on a surname. Not impossible.
Oh, yeah,
but rare.
Women don't do that.
It's just a bit blokey, isn't it, to have a nickname like that? It's like having big arms.
I have a bit of a cringe that women do when they refer to people as lads, like, all right, lads, look at these lads. I don't know why, probably very sexist of me. I hate it when women do it.
It's your internalised misogyny.
All right, lads, how's it going? I'm like, oh, what are you doing?
That's not your word. It's not your word. Bill Ward we've got here. Bill Ward sounds like a hack from like a newspaper journalist from the late 70s, political correspondent, like the lobby journalist, the legendary lobby journalist, Bill Ward, who had just smoked 60 a day, always stank a whiskey, but he'd always get the scoop, Bill Ward.
Yeah.
Had a coronary in his late 30s, but Bill Ward, what a man, what a man. Domain talking point. This is where our super patron David Domain keeps an eye on previous episodes and elaborates. So we were talking about nominative determinism, right? So we just sort of give an example there of where your name dictates who you are. There is, I was talking about what is the opposite of that. Like, for example, if you were called Grace and you were clumsy as fuck, right? Mm-hmm. There's a name for that. There's a word for it. It's an inapotonym, and that's the opposite. For instance, if somebody is called Joy, was a thundering hurricane of misery. That's very well worded. A similar term is misnomer, a koala bear being the best example. Marsupial, not a bear.
Yeah.
Also, slow worms, which are snakes, not worms. Lead pencil, which is graphite, not lead.
Oh.
And peanuts, which are legumes and not nuts. What the fuck?
Wow.
What else have they been lying about? Jesus.
Interesting, that. That was a lovely section. I enjoyed that.
This is what the man does, the Domain talking point. It's one of the best and most long-running features of the show. Nina Nana, we mentioned her. I asked if she was still reporting for ITN, and she is.
Oh.
I remember we all had great fun with Nina Nana's name.
Yeah.
Do you think there was a point where she hated her name as a kid? Oh, my God, she must have hated that name.
Yeah, I imagine there was a lot of repetition of it when she was at school, I imagine. It's nice to say, though, isn't it?
It is. Well, I think there's a lot of things that are just nice to say. And people just overlook how important that is when naming something. Like, for example, this trend of laboo-boos, right?
Oh, yeah.
These things have no fucking value whatsoever. People just like saying the word laboo-boo just for the shapes that you make with your boo-boo, la, boo-boo-boo, la. They're like childish noises. And Nina Nana, how did her parents tell her the difference between her name and the sound an ambulance makes?
Do you know, it's a really fun name, isn't it?
It is fun. But then there would have come a point in Nina Nana's life where suddenly she realised that people remembered who the fuck she was and everything came up roses. What most people think. So the thank you and the fuck you, I'll do the thank you. Some of these are touring related, a few tales of the road here. I did a gig in Annick on Saturday. What a warm welcome. So far away, but worth every mile of that journey because the people are so nice. And there was an older guy afterwards. And by the way, if he does listen to this, and I don't think he does, but no shade, mate. It was funny. So he said to me afterwards, he'd come up because I was selling books afterwards, and he said, have you been all right recently? I was like, yeah. He said, I just thought you might have had cancer or something. I thought you had cancer because of I haven't seen you on anything. I was like, whoa, ba-doosh, ba-doosh. Like 1-2. There you go with the left and the right. I was like, wow. So now I'm thinking I look gaunt. Oh, I'd kill to look gaunt, darling. But also that I've got no profile whatsoever. And this might be the bleakest moment of my touring life, Rachel. I was at a Travelodge recently. A lot of them, the motorway ones, there's nowhere to go for a walk in the morning. So I decided to go for a walk around the perimeter of the car park, of the service station. Yeah, it's really sad. And so I'd done one circuit and I passed the guy on the way, sort of nodded good morning to him. And then I was doing my second circuit and I saw the guy again and realised he was doing the same as me.
Oh.
Why does that make it so much worse? But I was like, oh, this is so sad. Have you had a similarly bleak experience on the road? Have you ever like had to kill time by like sitting at a bus stop?
The part of this job that is the worst is the killing time, I think. And I'm always early for everything.
Me too. Yeah.
If the only place to sit in is a Costa coffee, I'm so depressed. I find something about Costa so... I don't know what it is, but it's like you buy a drink that you don't want.
Oh, my God.
And you sit in there and you think, oh, I'll do some writing, and you never do.
Yeah.
And then you end up, again, spending money. I'll mooch around the charity shops and I end up buying something. I was killing time in Whitley Bay once, and I went into a charity shop and I bought a massive pottery dog, and I had to post it back to myself because it was too big because I was on tour.
Oh my
and I was
God.
Just in the post office going, what am I doing?
Have you ever told that story on stage, buying a giant pottery dog? I mean, I think a lot of women will have had kind of like impulse purchase moments shopping while abroad. I don't think anyone's bought a pottery dog and had to post it back to himself. Do you know, I think that is actually a legitimate reason for the social to stage an intervention. Like they actually have somebody at post offices for moments like that. If they see a woman trying to post something odd to herself.
Somebody should have been asking questions. I've still got it. It's in the house. It's a foot long and a foot high. It's like a vintage pot dog, and it was such a bargain. It was only a fiver.
Was it though, Rachel? You know, I mean, in the end, I'm just thinking of, you know, the dog that they had in Friends on wheels that they could never get rid of. I'm sort of envisaging that. But I feel, look, we both, maybe this is, I've done death stories recently with comics. I think Bleak Tales of the Road could also be a bit of a runner, but
absolutely.
It's cathartic. I feel cleansed. What's your fuck you?
Cyclists on pavements, I can't cope with it. It's actually ruining my life now, Jeff. It's coming to a point where I'm like, you're walking up the road and someone is as close to you as possible on a bike. I'm having sort of homicidal thoughts about it. I just think something else. And electric bikes on pavements, it is miserable.
I think you'll have a lot of friends on this podcast mentioning that. But I would also point out, if you did do that and then it was on the news, they would find the footage of you in the post office posting a giant dog back to yourself.
The signs were there. Yeah. I wouldn't have a leg to stand on, would I?
All right. Yeah, we're going to start the show not talking about the chaos at the heart of government this week. We're going to instead be talking about the chaos at the heart of the BBC. So there was this issue, right? So there was a guy called something Prescott that started talking to the press over the weekend about kind of bias, institutional bias in the BBC, and there are examples given. The main one that's caused the biggest news is the clips of Trump, the splicing of the two clips to present a version of what he said, which was quite, you know, quite some distance from what was actually said. There were also issues with coverage of Gaza and the trans issue. I mean, first up, Rachel, like when you first saw the clip, I think like a lot of people, you were sort of thinking, oh, right, is it just was it just a little switcheroo here, or they've jumped up? And then you watch, you go, oh, right, that's actually really bad.
It's terrible. I mean, I cannot believe that the BBC, someone has actually done that. I think it's mind-blowing and so dishonest and wrong. I'm aghast at it, actually.
Do you know what is bad is I was thinking, if I did that on a podcast, right, with the Circulationist podcast I have, which I always say, I'm in the Premier League, but I'm not Champions League places, but, you know, I'm safe for a while. We have a few big wins at the away clubs. Even if I did that on this and I represented somebody as having said something a bit different from what they said, I wouldn't sleep at night. So it does make you wonder. I mean, there are stages in these things. There is a person who's sitting there, right? So there's a producer and an editor. So they've sat down with this footage and it might have happened at quite like, not a junior level, but a lower level. But even that decision was a bit mad. It sort of suggests that the person who did it was kind of very hostile to Trump, which is completely understandable. The guy's got form.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a journalist for a licensed fee payer funded organisation, you just can't bring that shit to work. That's the problem, right?
I just don't understand. Like, to me, I can't believe that the man who, let's be honest, created the term fake news.
I know.
You've done it. He said enough things that you don't need to do this. Like, and to present that to the public who pay for the BBC, it blows my mind, seriously.
Yeah, I mean, giving him a moral victory. And the point is with so many of these things, it's a bit like overusing the word racist, right? Eventually, the word racist has less power and it's counterproductive. If you actually go for Donald Trump and miss, it helps him. And he was able to come out and say, you know, the BBC is 100% fake news, which in itself, Donald, is fake news. I mean, it's not 100%, is it, mate? Classic Donald. Had to overreach, didn't he? But the BBC, they plan to say on the Trump edit, right, and I'm quoting from a newspaper report here, is that it hadn't intended to mislead the public, but in light of looking at it again, all right, maybe, no, you should have seen it the first time, it believed that there should have been some kind of white flash or wipe to make clear to the audiences that these were two distinct parts of the speech. I mean, it just, that sort of sounds like, I used to do, when I was a teacher, I used to do GCSE media studies. And that is, like, I wasn't very qualified to do it. And that is what I would have said on day one of editing. Really?
I mean, whoever did that, I'd love to know who it was, and I'd like to see them publicly sacked. It's like in a day and age where you're looking at videos and you're like, is that AI? I don't know what, like, is that real or not? Like, there's enough stuff that I can't decipher if it's real or not.
Yeah, no, that is a problem. And then with Trump as well, you know, mostly, with so many things he's done, if you want to make him look bad, you just hit play, right?
That's it's
not that difficult.
Most people think.
So the Director General, Tim Davey, it's not sacking, they both stood down, and then the CEO of News has also gone. And, yeah, I think just the scale of this, you know, there was a chance, I guess, that Trump could have sued the BBC. I mean, he sued ABC, he sued broadcasters. So I suppose they're trying to get out ahead of it. But I did wonder, Rachel, you know, can you imagine if humans were as culpable for being creative with the truth as a news network? You know, like that thing when you got a female partner or friend and they're giving you their account of an argument, but they want you to side with them so much that the moment they start telling the story, you're going, this is bollocks. Like, so they go, yeah. So I said to her, and she turned around, right? And she looked me up and down and go, did she look you up and down? Why is it always looking you up and down? And she was sneering, all proper sneering she was. And you go, all right, just look, I'm on your side. This might sound frivolous. This is exactly like this, where most of the British public are quite hostile to Trump. So they're already on your side, but they've done that thing of telling a story about an argument at work and just going way over the top.
Yeah. I'm glad that people have stepped down because they should do. But it just makes you think, well, is there anything else now?
Mm.
You know, the amount of time to BBC of, you know, how many more scandals do we need to have before some sort of standards are back? We've had Hugh Edwards. I am just at the point where I'm like, what now?
Well, yeah, and also there was, you know, the Bob Villain thing where nobody kind of thought that it might be wise to think twice about somebody wishing death on someone. I mean, I was thinking about that as well. I was driving home last night and about how weird it must have been for the people, you know, the people that go to Glastonbury to just go and get off their tits and just have a bit of peace, love and all that sort of stuff. And even if they were pro-Palestine, where I wonder at what point where they were going, where they were high on their fucking mushroom oil or whatever, where they were going, sorry, death. I don't know, man. I'm not in a death mood necessarily.
Well, this has taken a turn that's not for me.
I might have to go back to the healing tent. I mean, the idea that the BBC is institutionally biased, I mean, that's what's weird to me, is people saying that like it's not self-evidently, like it doesn't quite clearly skew fucking one way. Like it is. If you and I, we go, we do meeting there, we do work there. Yeah, of course it does. I would say that, right, you know, the amount of graduates, the kind of degrees they do, probably even people that ride a folding bike to work, I would say that yes.
God, no.
I mean, geez, leave those people alone, please, Rachel. They're even more risk. Because the bike could fold on them once you punch them. But yeah, that does translate to political views as well. The problem is, right, every organisation has that, right? If you went to the Telegraph, you went to all these places, everywhere has. Even if you went to a primary school teachers are more likely to hold certain views. The problem that the BBC has is we pay for it and it's supposed to represent a broad spectrum of opinion. That's it. It always comes back to that. And if it's not doing that, then it's not doing its job.
I agree.
And I wonder as well, though, because look, full disclosure here, when I was on the diversity panel, which always makes people laugh still, yep, I did that. I was there. I was on the BBC diversity panel. And Tim Davey, you know, got on with him well. And I think that there are people on the right that are celebrating him going. I think he did have to go in this situation. But I do ask the question that Labour seem more than happy with this, because Tim Davey did run as a Tory councillor. I think that there's a little bit of politics here as well, is that Labour are not that displeased for this to happen.
You would think, well, with diversity with the BBC, it's right, have the diversity on the screen, great, but you're not really, you haven't got diversity behind the scenes either, have you? Because I don't think there's a lot of working class people working at the BBC, are there? You know?
So Lisa Nandy finds herself unexpectedly thrust into the forefront. I don't know if you've seen much of Lisa Nandy. She always looks really shocked to be asked her opinions on anything. Like, I remember not that long ago, she seemed to be quite a sharp operator. I don't know what happened to her, if she just lost the love for it, but she doesn't seem to know what fucking day of the week it is. And then I guess she's doing culture, and she's probably thinking, yeah, I mean, no one can get let out of prison early. Do you know what I mean? It's nothing to do with the economy. I'm sweet here. And then she's like, what? What's that? Donald Trump might sue. Well, we're going to have a war with America because of a clip. Fucking hell. And she's out there. And then the funniest thing with Lisa Nandy is when people ask her clips about something that's not in her brief, she literally looks like... Do you remember that thing with the Fast Show where the boss would just open the drawer and there'd be kittens in it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at this, yeah.
I mean, just to finish this section, it is odd as well. You know, like the media, it is an important story, and that's why I'm talking about it, but it's nowhere near as important as the media find it, right? And I do think it's odd that the BBC have to report negatively on themselves. It's so funny. Like, if I was a news network and I had something like this going on, I would not be the lead story on my own news. I would not open.
It is really amusing, that, isn't it? Having to... It's like reading your bad reviews out on stage.
I would just go, and the news today is that Jeff had another smashing gig last night. No problems there. Absolutely didn't act like an entitled dick in the green room and asked where his Diet Cokes were. Move on. Just to say, before we get on to the Have I Got News For You swearing scandal, is Rachel, you're on tour next year. Is that on sale?
Yeah, it's on sale now. Get it out as far in advance as possible. That's what I say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Next October and November. All tickets, rachelfairburn.com.
What is the name of the tour?
It's called Vexy Beasts. And it's, I do character comedy now, would you believe?
You did a run at the Edinburgh Fringe, and so is this an extension of that?
So this is a new character show, yeah, which people keep asking me about. And I'm like, I don't know. I've not written it yet.
What kind of characters do you have most fun doing?
So there's one that's based on my sister's friend. I don't think she knows. Things that she says that are just completely outrageous. Or, I have to say, characters that are really sly and bitchy, they're my favourites to do. Because you get to say things that you think that you would never get away with saying in your own comedy, but you can do it as a character.
I mean, I suppose there has been a pressure in comedy for a while of all the girls have got to be for the girls. You know, you can't speak out against women and all this sort of stuff. But character comedy is kind of a way... The idea that women aren't there to be satirised in the same way men are is kind of ridiculous. I mean, there is something great about bitchy women, though. It's,
I love it.
Just when the eye, one eye slightly closes as they're about to say something, you go, this is going to be fucking great. What she's
I love it. I love it. No one wants a conversation about how nice someone else is. I mean, I was thinking of the week when I catch up with my mates, I'm like, just sit down and slag people off. That's it.
I mean, you said you had that one mate that you take a list. Do you take a list of targets?
Oh my God, yeah, we have the agenda. We're all like, add that to the agenda. And she brings a notepad. It's a specific notepad she has. And we put it on the table and we go, right, this thing. It's very cathartic.
Well, do check out Rachel's live dates. I should say as well that this week coming up, Thursday in London, I think it's nearly sold out. And then Exeter in Sunday is a big room and it's pretty full. But I had another pop online recently. I don't know if you saw, Rachel, but I had a go at Aldershot because it didn't sell as well as it should have for a comedian of my undoubted stature. I sort of just went on, was like, I'm too good for you, you shithole. Like, I just slagged it off. I just went counterintuitive. And then I saw that I'm in Bridport on Saturday and it just hasn't quite sold how I'd hoped. But instead of just appealing for more to, you know, comedians always say, hey, can't wait, all this sort of stuff. I'm going the other way. And I just said, look, you're lucky that I'm coming, Bridport. It's a disgrace that it's only 60% sold. What is wrong with you? If you don't come, I'm going to tell all the other big comics. Like, it's so ridiculous that a person would go on and say this stuff. It does show, sadly, that rage bait works. I have had loads of people just going, who are you? This is an awful way to sell tickets. You're a prick. And then what's funny is both times there are people that just say, well, I had a ticket and I'm not coming now. I'm like, fuck off. No. But instead, so first up, I don't believe them. But instead of saying that, I'm just like, your loss, it's better that you're not there. You're the kind of people that I don't need. I need to stop it, but I gotta say, rage bait, fucking addictive. Okay, we're going to talk about the last Friday's episode of Have I Got News For You. So first up, full disclosure, if you look at the writing credits for that, you will see my name. I contributed a few gags for the chair script, so about 8 comics and stuff like that. So, you know, let's just get that out there. But I wanted to pick up the story because afterwards, I watched it and there was 2 instances of the C word in it. And I was a bit surprised, but, well, I didn't feel like some people, because this is absolute right-wing tabloid catnip. Let's read how the Daily Mail phrase the start of their story. The BBC faced mass backlash, which I guess means some people posted on a social media site, following repeated use of the word in reference to David and Victoria Beckham. I mean, repeated is twice, but yeah, I get it. It's quite a lot. To David and Victoria Beckham on Friday night's episode of Have I Got News For You. Anchor Catherine Wright, well, host, not really an anchor, and panellist Maisie Adam both used the profanity, Rachel. Profanity, that's brilliant to hear that word again. Been too long since we've heard that. They both used the profanity in a section discussing Sir David's investiture by King Charles last week, which prompted viewers to lambast the corporation. I mean, can we just say first up, I have no doubt that there probably were quite a few people that were offended by the use of that word and surprised. But also, like, it's not journalism to just search Have I Got News For You in a toolbar. You're going to find people offended at everything. You're going to find people offended at the font of the new titles for this morning as well. Yep. So, I mean, what about just on a taste and decency issue? Were you offended of Tunbridge Wells?
Now, listen, I swear, but also it is a comedy show and that's fine. And I swear, and I know there's times and places where you don't swear. Like, I don't think I've swore on here. It's not, it doesn't matter. In everyday life, I have a foul mouth, but I know who to swear and who not to. I just find it cringe. Just beep it. It's funnier if you beep it.
I think it makes it sound more like risque if you do beep it for some reason. I don't know why.
There's the added thing of, was it because it was 2 women that said the word? People didn't like it even more.
I would honestly imagine that was a big part of it.
But would it be okay if Ian Hislop had said it and Paul Merton? People wouldn't have been that offended. I think people were offended that, you know, Catherine and Maisie said it. But she was repeating something David Beckham said in an email, wasn't she?
Well, that was kind of what I thought was missed there. We go, well, they're sort of only quoting what he said and his sort of naked desperation to be knighted. But yeah, focus on the 2 female comics. If Miles Jupp had said it, they would have gone, oh, delightful and ironic.
Yeah, they just said, oh, it's very refreshing to hear that. And I thought it was a bit edgy and naughty.
What most people think.
So viewers took to X. No one takes to X, right? Stop using that phrase. But I love these quotes. Unacceptable broadcasting of the C word. This is a recorded programme. So who at the BBC felt it was okay not to cut or bleep it out? Really disappointing. That was from Rachel Fairburn, it sounds like. And another called for Ms. Ryan to be axed, saying the same BBC that allows the C word to be broadcast once in connection with Victoria Beckham. I mean, that was one thing that did annoy me. There was one article that sort of said, like, almost like alleged feminist Catherine Ryan said about Victoria Beckham. I don't know that the rules, or I mean, she did sort of retract it, but I don't know if the rules of feminism say that you can't be critical of any other woman. This viewer went on to say that Catherine Ryan should be suspended. Well, given that they have guest hosts who only do the show once every 2 years, I guess everyone's sort of on a suspension from that show. But what I loved about it as a scandal is the taste and decency thing. I mean, we had a lot of this when we were young. I kind of miss it. Every like couple of weeks or so, it'd be like F-bomb shame at the BBC or lesbians on Brookside. I think we should go back to more of this.
I think as well, it's that thing, and I've mentioned this before, like when, you know, if when I say the C word, people don't like it. But when Fleabag says it, oh, it's groundbreaking and, you know, that kind of
thing. Oh, so naughty.
So naughty, yeah. So I think there is the added thing of, you know, oh, these two women saying the C word. To be honest, I am quite prudish in that respect. I'm a bit like, oh, you should have just beeped it. And I don't know why I'm like that, because I swearing doesn't offend me, really. But I just think it's one of those things where it's like, oh, just beep it. But also, Catherine was just repeating what Sir David Beckham now had said in an email when he was kicking off about not getting his knighthood the first time round, wasn't he? So
I think from Maisie's point of view as well, like when I've done panel shows, there is this kind of rule. Like if you... It's kind of like the dark arts. But if you say something that's not funny and it doesn't work and you think, right, I don't want that in the edit, one of the ways you could get it out of the edit was by throwing in a C-bomb. That's not the reason she said it, because it was a funny joke which got a laugh.
Yeah, it was funny, yeah.
Yeah, I think neither of them would have expected it, in fairness. Like everyone's saying, I was surprised to see it in the edit. I think maybe both of them were a little bit too, but they probably didn't lose too much sleep. It's funny how the things that can get you in trouble do change over the years. Like when we were kids, right, if somebody swore at the Royal Variety, that would be the thing there, wouldn't it? If you were blue, being blue, yeah. No one could be blue. All right, it's very blue, very blue. And then we had Saxgate. Now, that was the late noughties. So we'd had along the noughties were fairly unhinged, weren't they? Very dark. Yeah. A lot of rape gags and stuff like that in the noughties. Yeah. And then it was almost like it was brewing, wasn't it? Middle England was just waiting for something. And then Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand had that podcast thing where... And then suddenly... Oh, I forgot his name. The guy that played Manuel. What was his name?
Andrew Sachs.
Andrew Sachs. Yeah, hence Saxgate. Well done, Jeff. Jesus Christ. You're speaking to a guy that did a lot of gigs last week. And then suddenly, like, he was basically David Attenborough for a week. Like, he was a cross between David Attenborough and the Queen. I mean, look, what they said was pretty crass, but fucking hell, like, it was so ridiculous, the reaction to it. And then it got woke. You know, these things change over time. Then it got woke where... I remember after I did Live at the Apollo, the first Live at the Apollo, the thing I got dragged for was a routine which implied that women like shoes. And it wasn't even all women, it was just my wife.
Yeah, well, do you know what I got after that? You're not working class. That's what I got. That's the thing that hurts me the most, you know. Like, for some reason, that people don't think I'm working class now. But it blows my mind when people say that to me. I'm like, someone wrote, you're not working class because you're on Live at the Apollo. I'm like, how does that work?
How much do you think we're getting paid for this?
Yeah, exactly. And because someone as well said to me once that, because I used to work in a library, that I wasn't working class because I used to work... What? Because I used to work around books. Am I not allowed to have books? Am I not? Yeah, it's really weird.
That's so funny. That is so funny. I mean, libraries were sort of originally, if I'm not mistaken, a way of educating the working classes. Like, the thing about posh people was they fucking had their own. Yeah. That's the whole point of...
Exactly. And it's that thing of like, if you're working class, you're not allowed anything nice. Oh, am I not allowed a book? Am I not? Or like, am I not allowed to eat at a nice restaurant? You know, that kind of thing. Like, oh, I've just got to stay in my lane, ever. I'm not allowed to have anything nice, am I not? Or I'm not allowed to learn anything. Yeah, it really confuses me sort of what people think working class people are like.
It's so funny, isn't it? Like, it's the old you've changed bit. Like, among your working class mates, the things that could qualify as a you've changed is so tight and restrictive. Like, if you're at the bar and it's like, you know, that airport pint, right? Whenever you go on a stag do and you have breakfast and everyone goes, should we all have a pint? I reckon a lot of the blokes are thinking, let's not, eh? It's like, it's half eight. I've always maintained that lager is not a good breakfast drink anyway. If you're going to drink alcohol, it should be something sweeter and fizzy. I know people might call me, they might even question my sexuality, but I said what I said. But if you have a gin and tonic, then it'd be like, what you've changed? What, gin and tonic? Just because you're part of the establishment, Norcott. I mean, in fairness, this week, you could say that. You know, I've already dropped the fact that I was on a meeting with Tim Davey and I was part of this week's. Maybe I'm part of the problem. I'm an establishment shill. It just changes over time, doesn't it? The offence. I remember once getting in trouble with other comedians is never fun either. And I once got in trouble with other comics. And I won't name who for this joke because I'm still on decent terms with them now. But it was around, it was after Me Too when, you know, things were highly sensitised. And it was also, I think, when Hillary was running to be president and Theresa May was prime minister. And I said, I thought the two names were sort of funny. So I said, oh, Theresa, Hillary, soon the world could be run by people who sound like your mum's bingo mates. And I just thought it's a stupid throwaway. And I stand by it. Theresa and Hillary would have been kind of funny. You know, the two powerful people called that. Even if it was what they said, it was just a fucking joke. And then I got quite a few female comics not happy with that. Like, oh, we're so tired of this. It's exhausting, all this sort of stuff. And I was like, fuck me. So it's all about the content. I reckon, you know, you say that joke now, I literally don't think it would have the same response. So
what you get offended with is so, can be such a wide scale of things. Like, do you know what I get offended by? And it's so weird. I love Family Guy. It's one of my favourite shows. But when they do jokes about British people having bad teeth, I get the other part. I'm like, I'm sort of sitting there tutting and rolling my eyes and I think, well, I can't laugh at everything else that they do and then get upset about that. That's the thing that really gets me when people say British people have bad teeth. I find it really offensive. But does it matter? It doesn't matter, does it?
I suppose the thing with swearing is I have noticed that it's just creeped up. It's just crept up. And you know, so Ofcom have to do like a survey every so often. Because you sometimes think of Ofcom, like, where the fuck do you get off? Like, who Ofcom's Ofcom? Like, who are you to decide? But they do this survey of attitudes every so often. And what offends people changes over time. So for quite a while, as you'd expect, as things got more woke in the 2010s, it became more issues of representation than swearing. But I wonder now if we're going back to swearing, because the problem with the C word is there's no word above it.
No,
there's still, I mean, there's obviously like the racial words that you just can't say, but in terms of just a basic swear word, there's no word above it.
No, I think really, can we just have a word that is really bad? Can we keep it? Can we keep it sacred?
I mean, that's a good point. Yeah,
but I think it's weird. The word offence is weird. It's like, are you offended or do you just not like it? Am I offended or is it just something I don't like? Yeah, I don't like it. But also, who cares that you don't like it? That's the other thing. Who cares that I don't like hearing the C word twice?
I mean, you make such a good point. So I did a charity gig for a hospice once and I died so fucking... Oh, my God. That wasn't supposed to be a pun. Jesus Christ. I did genuinely... I mean, we're here with another death story now, but what the hell? I was on, right, and they had an auctioneer on before me that went on for ages and was quite funny as well. Like, I could already tell that he had a better gig than I was ever going to have. It went on for like 45 minutes and I thought they were going to call an interval. They didn't. And then they made me stand up in a room, part of the room that wasn't lit. So it was just this disembodied voice and I died really badly. And I made this joke about, but I can't remember what the joke was, but the punchline was don't ram it down my throat. I eventually got booed off. And as I was walking out, I could hear this woman complaining to somebody else about, she was going, no, I just thought it was really insensitive to say, don't ram it down your throat when a lot of our patients have to have tubes down their throat. I went, look, I said, sorry, look, that wasn't offensive. I was just shit. Okay.
She was really wanting to find something to be so offended.
She wanted to be cancelable. And I was there having to go, no, I was just very unfunny. Okay. Let me be clear about this. God. And I walked out of there feeling like somehow I'd had the fucking win.
Most people think.
All right, picking up of issues of male representation, Rachel and I are now going to discuss an evolution in this, is having a boyfriend embarrassing thing, but also there are a lot of people talking about, you know, women lamenting the fact that they're having a baby boy rather than a baby girl. So that's for the patrons. For everybody else, it'll be the end of the show. Okay, well, that was a nice chat for the patrons there. Yeah, I think it's finally worth, you know, speaking to an actual female about what's going on with females. It's kind of a radical thing that we do on this show. Rachel Fairbairn, thanks so much for being back on the show. Just remind us of, well, people can obviously find you on your socials, but just give us the name of that show for next year again.
Oh, Vexy Beasts, and tickets are at rachelfairbairn.com.
Okay, and I'll be back hopefully with a breaking news episode later this week, where I am sure that the BBC would have probably have moved to some sort of crowdfunder type model.